So therefore, from the from the Prasangika Madhyamika viewpoint, without experiencing the many complications, which is encountered in the case of presentation by the other Buddhist philosophical schools of thought, one is able to make a presentation which doesn't contradict the experience, and where one doesn't have even the slightest contradiction. The next verses, verse 111, 12, 13, 14, 15, discusses the point that there is no valid reason at all to prove the true existence of the object as well as the subjective mind. According to the Vaibhishikas and so on, they accept both the object and the subjective mind consciousness as having true existence. And in that case, it will be very difficult to posit these two, the object and the subject, because there is no reason and there are many contradictions. And if they say from a truly existent sense consciousness, a truly existent object is proved, then there also question can be asked by saying that what is the reason to prove the inherent existence of the consciousness. And if you say that this can be proved by saying that the consciousness is there in the object of the consciousness, then again we can ask that what is the basis to prove that the object has inherent or true existence. And if you say that they exist by mutually dependent on each other, and then in that case, in the absence of one, the other cannot come. For example, in the case of non-existence of the child, the father cannot exist, and in the case of non-existence of the father, the child can't exist. So therefore, in the end, both could not exist. Or for example, sprout arises from seed, and in depending on the sprout, and therefore it is dependent on it, but the existence of the seed is also realized through the existence of the sprout. Similarly, through the consciousness which is produced in relation to the object of in relation to the object, one should also realize the existence of the object. If such an argument is made, this is answered by saying that in the case of the sprout, it can be understood not necessarily due to seed, but through the mind which sees the sprout. And therefore, how could we prove the truly existent object? And in that case, you also need to have something else that realizes or understands the true existence of consciousness, but there is no such perceiver. And the next three next is establishing presenting some of the reasons that establishes the selflessness. The first reason is called the reason of diamond sliver. When using this reason, the non-existence of the cause is refuted, and this is presented in verse 116 and 117. And even with the perception of an ordinary person, we do see things are produced from their causes, and not only that, but also through inferential cognition, this is actualized, and therefore the various fruits like lotus stalk are dependent on varied causes which produces it. And also, if you ask who created these multifarious causes, they are created by their own individual causes. And if you ask how these different causes have the capacity to produce various results, this again can be answered by saying that they are simply due to their preceding causes. So whether it is the body of a sentient being or even a consciousness, they arise from their individual substantial causes. And similarly, and if we trace the continuum of the substance of this body, we can go it to certain elements, and then finally we go to what is known as the space particle, which is, I think, is a very subtle particle. So the main composer, the very subtle particle, is there right at that time. So from that point of view, with regard to the very subtle origin of the cause of this human body, which is made of flesh and bones, and then also in the case of the cause of external objects like earths, stones and so on, so in that primary cause, I think the main cause, the main particle is this particle is the same, but when they encounter different factors, different conditions, then these conditions react on each other and produces different results. And it is in one of these conditions, I think, that human karma or actions gets involved as one factor, one condition. And it is because of such human karma which comes into contact with those causes and conditions that the same substance could become constructive or could become destructive and negative. So this is what I presume, even though I do not know thoroughly. So when this question is asked, why these different causes can produce different results, these causes can produce different results because these different causes have different potencies, potentials and capacities, and in this, in many of these causes and factors, the karma also plays a role. So in any way, you can make a detailed explanation in this way. And in fact, the reason why this world came into existence, I think, is dependent on the karma of sentient beings. For example, unless there is a constructor of a house, the house will not come into existence. And with regard to the construction of the house, the person first mentally makes a plan, and then later on actually does the work of construction and moves into the house and lives there. So similarly, probably is the case with the external environment. And but however, if you ask other questions like why the water is there, or why the tree is there, or in fact why water is liquid and humid, and why fire is hot and burning, and why the mind is luminous and cognizant, I would say these are just law of nature. So in short, everything arises from their causes and factors. Next is refuting the arisal of things from permanent causes. So the next three verses refutes the notion that the things are created by an Ishvara. So this, I think, is similar to refuting Creator God and so on. So therefore, among the audience, there may be non-Buddhist practitioners like Christians and so on. So when I make this presentation, you should simply understand that this is a Buddhist notion. So in your case, if you feel more comfortable and effective to follow a Creator God, then there is much better to follow it rather than think about these points, because these points make no sense to you then. So in the case of the conception of Ishvara as the creator, they accept the Ishvara as permanent and self-evolved. And now they accept that such a permanent cause produces an impermanent result, and you can easily now see the contradictions there. So I will simply read them, verse 118, 19, and 120.
Shiva Sita Dajim. Shiva Sandy, which is a good. I didn't have a tender to come up.
Next outline is two, three, four, five verses states that if the cause is permanent, then it could not be a cause of those that is dependent on a factor. Because if you ask a question by saying, what are those results that are created by Ishvara? And if you say the result is the subsequent continuity of the Ishvara, then this is, can be refuted by saying that haven't you accepted this as permanent? And then in that case, how could you produce it? And even in the case of the consciousness, it arises from an object, in relation to an object. and they arose from beginningless continuity of mind, and experience of happiness and suffering arises from virtuous deeds and non-virtuous deeds, and therefore what are those fruits or results that has been created by Ishvara? And if this Ishvara, who is the producer of fruit, is permanent, and if it is there from beginningless time, and then in that case, how could the result, happiness and suffering, could have a beginning? They could also, or they could, they should also be beginningless. So it is proved that things do not arise from permanent cause or without causes, but they are produced from their own causes. And if Ishvara is dependent on something, then he cannot be permanent, he is also dependent. And if the different fruits are dependent on their causal factors, and then these causal factors would be the cause and not the Ishvara. And if these causal factors are present, then Ishvara has no power to stop the production of the fruit. Because in the essence of these factors, the Ishvara has no power to produce the fruit. And if the Ishvara is producing the fruit reluctantly, then that means he has no power, he is dependent on others. And next one, first two lines of verse 126 explains or refutes the explanation or philosophy which says that the cause is a permanent subtle particle. And the next two lines of verse 126 and also verse 127 is refuting the Samkhya philosophy, where they say that things are produced from a permanent primal substance. So this is these six lines actually is presenting the viewpoints of the Samkhya, saying that things are produced from permanent primal substance. And next is refuting their viewpoints. And therefore the first next three and a half verses, verse 128, 29, 30, and the first two lines of verse 131 is refuting that the fruits are expression and manifestation of a partless primal substance. And next three and a half verses, that is last two lines of verse 131 and then verse 132, 33, and 34, is refuting the notion that the cause is permanent.
Uh,
next three and a half verses, and that is the last two lines, verse 134, and then verse 135, 36, and 37, is refuting the viewpoint of Samkhya. And next three verses, verse 138, 39, and 40, is stating that such faults will not be there in the case of Madhyamika. Such similar faults will not be there in the case of Madhyamika. Because here the here it is argued by saying that even in the case of the Madhyamikas, the valid perception that measures the object, that cognizes the object, is a mistaken consciousness. So therefore what is measured by it, like emptiness, should also be false. And in that case, how it is proper to meditate on emptiness? So such is the argument presented by the opponent. This is answered by saying that without identifying the object of negation, its non-existence cannot be proved. For example, without apprehending and perceiving the son of the barren woman, we cannot perceive it is death. Because the non-existence of something is dependent on the existence of something. So therefore the object of negation, since it's totally non-existence, therefore the refutation of the refutation of it also cannot exist truly or inherently. And this is exactly what is explained in Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom. If there is nothing, there is not empty, then we cannot present empty in any sense. And if there is not the slightest trace of emptiness, and then we cannot also present the slightest trace of non-empty of those things. However, the meditation on emptiness is very proper, very suitable, because it acts as an antidote to true grasping. For example, if you get a dream of death of your son or your child, then that conception, thinking that now my child is no more living, that is an obstruction to the conception that perceives the existence of the child or the son. So that perception of non-existence is also false, but that will be able to eliminate and abandon the perception that sees the existence of the child. Next is summarizing the meaning of negation of non-existence of cause. This is explained in the first two lines of verse 141, where Shantideva says that in this way, when we analyze, there is nothing that doesn't have a cause. And the next two lines of verse 141 and the first two lines of verse 142 explains the refutation of production from both oneself and from others. And in the case of things, they are not found in the individual causes and factors, also in the collection of the individual causes and factors, and they also do not come from somewhere else, and therefore do not in that sense they are not produced, and there's also they do not abide in between, and also in the end when they cease they do not go anywhere else, and therefore things cannot arise from self, from others, or from both, or from without causes. Next is the reason of dependent relation. This is explained in the last two lines, so verse 142 and then verse 143 and 144. Due to ignorance, whichever we perceive as having true existence, these things, even though they appear as having true existence, but there's no such true existence, and therefore there is no difference between these and the illusion. And therefore the horses and the elephants that has been created by a magician, and those that has been created by causes and factors like the form and so on, in both the cases if you analyze from where they first came and where they exist and abide in between, and finally where do they go, if you analyze then you will find that there is no coming and going, and that is same in both the cases, the ones that are created by a magician and the ones that are created by causes and factors. And a particular fruit can be produced, and we see the production of a fruit when the necessary causes come together, and in the absence of such a cause we do not see such a fruit. So therefore things are dependent on the causes and factors, and therefore they are really like a reflection, and therefore how can such an object which is like a reflection has true existence. So when things are, when those that arise by depending on causes and factors, and those that do not arise or cannot exist without depending on causes and factors, clearly show that they are dependent on others and have no power over themselves, and therefore they are like reflection in a mirror. When we see our face in the when we see the reflection of our face in the mirror, the reflection of the face is devoid of the face. So similarly, things are merely created by the cause and the factor, and therefore they are like an illusion, and therefore they can't have true existence. So in short, because of the reason that things are dependent on their causes and factors, that they are dependent on their parts and the whole, that they are dependent on the mind that gives the designation and the term, that they do not have any true or inherent existence. But at the same time, this does not mean to say that your mind can create anything. So this is really you need to make a fine distinction about how these things function, that on the one hand things are designated, but at the same time this does not mean to say that your mind can designate anything and make anything come into existence. And next is the reason
Çalık büyüdü bu çişim. Onun için de bana söyledi.
reason of refuting the existence and non-existence of production and cessation. These are explained. This has three subdivisions. The first division explains that it refutes the inherent production by using reasons. And this is explained in verse 145, 46, 47 and 48. The meaning of these verses are, if things have inherent existence, then what is the use of the cause? Because in that case, cause and fruit cannot exist. And if things do not have inherent existence, then what is the use of the cause? Because then it is not a fruit. Now to this, others argue by saying that even though the causes do not produce the non-existent of things, but it simply changes it into conditioned things. And this is answered by saying that even with hundred thousands of causes, what is non-thing cannot be transformed into a thing, because it is permanent. And if it changes, then it cannot be a non-thing. It could then be a permanent thing. And in the first case, then it cannot be a permanent phenomena, it should be an impermanent phenomena. In the second case, it cannot be and in that case, even when the conditioned phenomena ceases, it should not cease, because they are of same nature, because you are then accepting them as conditioned as well as unconditioned. Next is refuting at the same time the inherent existence of cessation. This is explained in verse 149, and then in verse 150, from that point of view, it explains that both the samsara and nirvana are equal from that perspective. And next, you are instructed to make effort to realize emptiness. So the first division demonstrates the meaning of the ultimate mode of existence, and this is explained in verse 151 and 152 and 153. And from that balance of emptiness, there's nothing to lose and nothing to obtain. And in that perspective, what is the use of respect and what is the use of defamation and denying things? And those categories of the mind which are dependent on true grasping, these kinds of minds will naturally become weak, and they can be reduced and eliminated by realizing lack of inherent existence. And normally when someone harms us, or as we discussed earlier, all these afflictive emotions that harms us are related or have their source in ignorance, And whereas when we talk about bodhicitta or emptiness, these are not related to wrong consciousness like ignorance or misconceptions of the reality. So these kinds of minds help us strengthen those correct views and positive virtuous practices. And particularly if you have some taste of emptiness, then you will be able to see all phenomena as untrue, like an illusion, and that way you will be able to realize that all the attachment and hatred that I have developed until now is totally meaningless and mistaken and a complete error. And you will then be able to see that this kind of development of attachment and hatred, this is really like binding my own leg and making myself unmovable. So, and also when you see people making mistakes due to attachment, hatred, and due to ignorance, then you will be able to develop a special kind of compassion, because now you have gained some insight where others are unable to do that. And sometimes when you see an ant or a helpless insect moving in front of you and trying to cross a little humid drops of water and so on, then those of us human beings who have a better perspective, we can easily see how stupid these tiny insects are. You know, if he just make a turn in this way or that way, he can easily cross this water. So in this way you see the stupid mistakes that the sentient beings who have no insight into emptiness are making, and thereby you are able to develop more compassion. So it is in this way you are able to develop more compassion towards sentient beings, and also you are able to see the possibilities of achieving liberation, freeing yourself from sufferings and afflictive emotions, and thus your devotion to Buddha, your expression towards altruism, all this will grow, and you will develop more longing towards enlightenment. So when you reflect in this way, you can mentally actually confirm the truth of all these teachings. The only problem is that when it comes to developing actual experience, it needs effort. We need time. And the last two lines of verse, next, the first two lines of verse 154 also ask us to make effort to realizing such an emptiness, and by seeing everything in the form of a space. That means see everything like a space having no inherent existence. I, the Shanti Deva, and similar those people who are like me, when you employ and enjoy things, then you should adopt such a behavior. And next is showing the object of great compassion by highlighting the faults of the samsara. So the next six lines explains the faults of the samsara. That is the last two lines of verse 154, and verse 155 highlights the faults of this life. And in this life, with your aspiration to peace and happiness, you engage because of your conflict with others, or conflict with yourself, or by entering into enjoyable activities, your mind gets thoroughly disturbed. Either your mind gets disturbed or your mind gets very happy or excited. And if you are unable to fulfill your purposes, you suffer, and your wishes are fulfilled. In other words, in order to remove your sufferings and in order to fulfill your purposes, you make much effort and encounter much hardship through your body, speech and mind, and you enter into argument with others and even engage in conflicts using weapons, losing your body and so on. And next, verse 156, 57, 58 explains the faults of future lives. Even after coming, achieving happier migration again and again, and enjoying much happiness, again you die and experience suffering for a long time and fall into intolerable sufferings. And therefore, this cycle of existence is really like a big, like a cliff from the, where you can easily fall. So there are many pitfalls in this life of samsara, and therefore, apart from realization of emptiness, there is no other way to actualize liberation. And the next verses 159 and 60 explains that even when you are born in the happy migration, you have no time to do the dharma practice. And then verse 161 and 62 explains how this precious human life is difficult to find. And then verse 163, 4 and 5 explains how it is it explains that it is worthy to reflect on how we and other sentient beings suffer in the samsara. And then the the two final verses of this chapter, verse 166 and 67, explains the mode of apprehension of the great compassion. So this completes the ninth chapter, chapter on wisdom. So now we'll read from the text, maintaining like the rays of the sun. So from the maintaining like the rays of the sun, we are reading the actual process of establishing the selflessness. This again has three points. The first point is process of establishing the selflessness of the person. Now here, with regard to the process of recognizing the person and the self, and also with regard to the process of accepting that person as the object of focus of inborn grasping of the self, there all the Buddhist philosophies do not have any disagreement. However, in terms of actually identifying that self and the person, the sarvagas or the vaibhishikas and the sotantikas, they say that it is all these five psychophysical aggregates which are the final example of the person. And some say that, so among them there are some schools who say that it is all the five psychophysical aggregates which is the example of the person, and some say it is only the mind, and some say it is only, now in accordance with the mind only school of thought, they say that the final example is the mind basis of all. And and according to the great masters like Baba Viveka, who are the followers of the Svatantrika Madhyamika, and similarly some of the Sotantikas, they say it is the sixth mental consciousness or the continuity of the sixth mental consciousness which is the ultimate example of the person. And in fact Baba Viveka tries to prove that by using reason as well as logic. Now according to one's own system, that is in accordance with the Prasangika Madhyamika system, Chandrakirti has very clearly said in his Madhyamika Avatara in his Madhyamika avatar, Chandrakirti refutes and says that it is not the psychophysical aggregate which is the object of focus of the inborn self-grasping, and he says that it is the designated self which is the object of focus of the inborn self-grasping. Because he clearly says when you focus towards one of the psychophysical aggregates, then you develop perception saying that these are mine, but you do not develop a perception saying that this is me. And in relation to your own experience, you can find that the object of focus of inborn self-grasping is the person, not the psychophysical aggregates possessed by the person. So therefore, when we talk about the person, whether it's a man or a woman or a superior being, an ordinary person, or a person who is wandering in the samsara, or one who is already liberated, in the case of all these people, when we talk about person, it is something that is designated on the basis of designation, which is the five psychophysical aggregates. And therefore, it is neither the collection of the psychophysical aggregates nor the continuity of the psychophysical aggregates, which are the example of the person. And for example, in the case of a chariot, because a chariot is designated, because of the very fact that a chariot is designated on the collection of its parts or in relation to its individual parts, therefore it's clear that a chariot is neither the whole of the parts nor the individual parts. So similar is the case in the case of the person. And this is explained in the sutra by the Buddha himself, where he says, just as a chariot is designated in relation to the to its branches and the collection of the branches, similarly, in relation to the psychophysical aggregates, a conventional sentient being is designated. And such a process of recognition of the person is an excellent method of quickly realizing selflessness or suchness of the phenomena. And you should understand this right from the form to the highest level, omniscience. Now, with regard to establishing the lack of inherent existence of such a person, this will be explained under 2 points. First is establishing the lack of inherent existence of I, and then the lack of inherent existence of mine. And when you develop the view of selflessness, this should be done by using different reasons. The reason of having the reason like the reason of dependent relation, or the reason that proves that things do not have inherent existence as one or as many, and so on. So in the initial stage, investigating and examining your own mental state, mental continuum, you should identify and recognize how such an inborn self-grasping of the person arises, and this is extremely important. And then you should undertake analytical meditation as well as one-pointed meditation. And in the case of undertaking analytical meditation, the selflessness of the person should be established through the many reasons that we had already discussed. For example, we can use a reason by saying that if there is a person that has inherent existence, then it should be either as of same entity with the psychophysical aggregate, or should be separate, and apart from that there could be no third possibility. Now, if you accept the person as having inherent existence, and at the same time, if you see that as of same entity as the psychophysical aggregate, or separate from the psychophysical aggregate, there will be many shortcomings and faults. If you accept it as of same with the psychophysical aggregate, then you can't make a distinction between the psychophysical aggregate and the person, because they are inherently same. And if you see them as inherently different, then there should not be any relation with the person and the psychophysical aggregate. Or in other words, just as there are many psychophysical aggregates, similarly there should be many persons, so there are many shortcomings. And thirdly, there is also the shortcoming that the self should be produced and also should disintegrate, because the psychophysical aggregates are produced and disintegrate. And if you accept that, then you can't accept that it has inherent existence. And also, if the person has inherent existence, then the person of the past life and this life cannot have any connection, any relation, either in terms of cause-effect relationship, or in terms of or in terms of having the same nature. And if you are unable to maintain these two persons of the past life and this life as of same continuity, then you can't accept the possibilities of remembering past lives and so on. And if the person and the psychophysical aggregates are accepted as inherently separate, and then just as then the psychophysical aggregates should not possess the features of disintegration, the features of impermanence, like production, abidance, and disintegration, because the such things are not seen in the person. So then the psychophysical aggregate and the person will be totally separate, like the horse and the elephants. And in the case of the elephant, there is no need for us to see the features of a horse, because they have no relation at all. And if this is the case, then we cannot identify the psychophysical aggregates as not conditioned. And in that case, we can't accept the person as the object of focus of inborn self-grasping, just like the space and nirvana. And if the psychophysical aggregate and the person also, if the psychophysical aggregate and the person doesn't have any relation, and they exist inherently separate, and then even then, if you say that by observing the psychophysical aggregate one can develop the feeling of I, then in that case why can't we develop the feeling of I even in those objects and bases where there is no psychophysical aggregate? This is to say that even in the case when the psychophysical aggregate has no relation with the I, but still you can develop feeling of I on the basis of them, then the feeling of I could arise in relation to any basis, any objects. Next is establishing the lack of inherent existence of mind, and the process of establishing its lack of inherent existence is similar to the one you did in the case of I. Next is establishing the leg of selflessness of phenomena. Phenomena here refers to all types of psychophysical aggregates, elements, sense powers, and so on. And therefore, on the basis of these phenomena, you should negate the object of negation as is perceived by the inborn self-grasping. And when you negate the object of negation on the basis of this phenomena, there should not be the object of negation should not be there should not be over application or too little application. And with regard to the process of establishing it is selflessness, the process of using the reasons are quite similar to how you have used it with refuting the existence of the self of the person. And in the case of establishing the selflessness of the phenomena, first of all you should refute the idea that there is a partless object, because according to the Prasangika Madhyamika viewpoint, there is no phenomena, no object that is without parts, and that whichever is existent always possess parts. And then the next thing that you need to examine is whether the part and the whole are inherently same or inherently separate, or intrinsically same or separate. And if they are inherently or intrinsically same, then they should be completely same, even at the conventional level. And if they are inherently separate, then again they cannot have any relation, any connection, as we have done in the case of as we have understood in the case of establishing the selflessness of the person. And then you can also prove the selflessness of the phenomena by using a reason that observes the opposite. Now with regard to external and it is easier to realize the interdependent relation in relation to external and internal objects like a physical form. Now what is important is to prove that that which has inherent existence cannot be dependent on others, and that which is a result of depending on something else definitely is dependent on someone else. For example, in the case of a reflection of the face in the mirror, the reflection of the face in the mirror arises by depending on many external and internal causes and factors. On the other hand, if it has a self-supporting or independent existence, then the mind that perceives it should not be mistaken. So with regard to this reflection of the face in the mirror, there is one mode of appearance, and there is also a mode of existence of the reflection. So what you need to do is to prove the discrepancy between the appearance and the reality, and in this way, on the basis of that reflection of the face, if you are able to prove how it is dependently originated and how it is devoid of inherent existence, then taking this as an example, you should understand the interdependent nature or dependently produced nature with respect to all phenomena. So in this way you should find out how things are dependent, and when you endeavor to develop this view of selflessness, there are two main possible areas of mistake or error. These are the view of permanence and view of non-existence, or the two extremes of permanence and nihilism. And therefore it is through understanding and realizing that all phenomena are dependently originated, we should give up this view of nihilism or distance this view of nihilism. And likewise, on the reflection of the face, when you are able to see that it is dependently originated and therefore doesn't have inherent existence, and in this way when you affirm that it is without inherent existence, and with your valid perception when you cognize that, then you are able to distance yourself from the view of permanence. And therefore this reason of dependent relation is highly pressed, because it is this reason of dependent relation which is the capacity to eliminate these two extremes. And that is why this reason has been highly pressed in the question of Madhvipa Sutra and also in the Madhyamika Avatara. In the Madhyamika Avatara, Chandrakirti says that it is by using this reason of dependent origination that you can put an end to all the networks of wrong view. So this kind of view of emptiness should not, this kind of view of emptiness is a view that is applicable and that pervades to all phenomena from form to enlightenment, and therefore this is not a temporary emptiness which is understood by some other people, and therefore this is an all-pervading emptiness. And this is also not a fabricated emptiness, and therefore this kind of emptiness is called the emptiness that possesses all supreme aspects, because here there is application of indivisibility of appearance and emptiness. So this is not an emptiness that cannot be comprehended, that cannot be understood, that cannot be realized. And therefore this is a path that liberates you from the two obscurations to nirvana and liberation, nirvana and omniscience. And also this is the sole path of the three vehicles, the three paths, and that grants the state of enlightenment. And next, second point explains the process of sustaining one-pointed meditation. So when you undertake one-pointed meditation on emptiness, you meditate only on the mere negation of the object of negation. So one-pointed meditation on emptiness is not meditating on a blue halo of light, or merely withdrawing your mind from the object of negation, or merely maintaining a non-conceptual thought where you have no idea whether to affirm something or negate something. So after analyzing the nature of an object, when you find the lack of inherent existence, then simply you maintain your mind on that state of mere absence of the object of negation. Now, for example, if you take an example of the process of meditation on selflessness of the person, and then on the basis of this mere I, it is important to understand this mere I as an object of focus of the inborn self-grasping, and how this mere I doesn't have inherent or intrinsic existence. And in the case of a person with sharp intelligence, you should seek the meditation through view, and otherwise you should seek view through meditation. And next it explains about how one should cultivate kama abiding or shamat in relation to such selflessness of the person or phenomena. First you should collect the necessary causal factors for undertaking shamat or kama abiding meditation, and then let your mind focus on that selflessness whichever you are meditating, the selflessness of person and phenomena, and then ensure that non-conceptual meditation is not interrupted by thinking and excitement, and when you are interrupted by them, remember the antidotes, and then with introspection you should be able to identify even the subtlest types of mental thinking and excitement, and without letting yourself being controlled by them, you should sustain your practice, and then the different stages of mental stability will arise. For example, the nine states of mental abiding will arise. That is, placing the mind, continually setting the mind, replacing the mind, closely setting the mind, pacifying, disciplining the mind, pacifying the mind, thoroughly disciplining the mind, one-pointed meditation, equilibrium. So these are the nine stages, and these nine stages of mental abidings are actualized through the practice of the six powers, and this also involves the four processes of mental engagement. In the case of the first mind, it is actualized by the power of hearing. In the case of the second mental abiding, it is actualized by the power of thinking, and the next two are actualized through the power of mindfulness, and the next two are actualized by the power of introspection, and then the next two are actualized by the power of effort, and then the ninth mental abiding is actualized by the power of familiarity or habituation. And these practices are also interspersed by the practice of four mental engagements, because in the case of the first two mental abidings, you have the mental engagement which is called intensely engaging the mind, and then with regard to the next five minds, your mind engages interruptedly, and then during the eighth mental abiding, the mind engages without interruption, and then during the ninth state of the mental abiding, the mind engages continuously and effortlessly. And in this way, when you remain careful of the disturbance from thinking and excitements, and let your mind focus towards the object through the process of the nine mental abidings, and then gradually you relax your effort, and through your habituation you are able to develop physical and mental perfection of training, or mental and physical pliancy, and at that time you actualize kama abiding. And having actualized such a kama abiding, then you should again analyze selflessness as you have done earlier, And therefore, it is important to make your mind habituated on the meaning of selflessness through this twin practice of calm abiding and a special insight. And that is, on the one hand, you try to develop mental stability towards the object. On the other hand, you should also develop the discriminative awareness, the analysis of the wisdom. And because of this combined employment of one-pointed meditation and analytical meditation, and then as a result of such analytical meditation, you are able to develop fresh kind of pliancy, and then you actualize special insight. And that is called harmonious development of calm abiding and special insight. And during the post-meditative session, you should try to see everything in the form of illusion. And there are two meanings of illusion: the superficial meaning of illusion and the real meaning of illusion. And here it's important to understand the meaning, the real meaning of illusion. And then the text also explains about the need to properly understand the object of negation, and otherwise you might negate everything. And with regard to the proper development of understanding of illusion, this has been explained in the King of Meditative Stabilization Sutra and also in the Wisdom Perfection Sutra. And according to the Wisdom Perfection Sutra, when it speaks about the ultimate truth as illusion, then this means that even though things merely exist but do not have true existence. And then there is also illusion in the sense that even though things appear but they are empty. So here we are talking about developing the understanding of illusion in the second sense. And it is really very difficult to present something after having refuted the object of negation. So it is based on your own experience that you should be able to refute this object of negation. And that is why Tsongkhapa has said that this is extremely difficult. So after having refuted the object of negation, based on your experience, you'd be able to understand that how things still exist nominally and designatedly. So this text called Maintaining Like the Rays of the Sun is the instruction of the Bodhisattva Chekhov Chembo, and this is explained in accordance with the instruction of Tsongkhapa, the Dharma King. And in order to know the details, you should read The Great Stages of the Path to Enlightenment by Tsongkhapa. And then in the concluding verses, the composer says that I have explained here the uncommon causes to enlightenment, and His Holiness is laughing at some of the styles of composition, saying that even though I myself is not a good composer, but I am good in pinpointing others' faults. And as is the special practice of Bodhisattva Chekhova, and I have explained the four preliminary practices and the actual process of development of bodhicitta, and by clearly explaining the common modes and uncommon modes of the great pioneers, and particularly the systems of Shantideva where he speaks about the process of exchanging oneself for the benefit of others. And so this process of Shantideva's practice and the process of maintaining by Chekhova are put together and presented them in the form of a complete path. And I've explained even the subtlest details for practice. And whatever I have explained is due to the kindness of my master. The thoughts of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are very profound, and my intellect is weak, and effort is less, and there will definitely be wrong interpretation and incomplete and improper explanation. And those who possess the Dharma eye, I confess from the depth of my heart in front of you, and whatever merit that I have accumulated due to the result of such work, may all sentient beings who are infinite like the space, may their mind never be separate from the bodhicitta, and through such power, whenever they see my mind, speech and body, may all this become a source for peace and happiness, and may this become a cause for removing all types of sufferings. And then he says, as has been requested to me by many, that I should compose such a text called Maintaining Rays of the Sun, which is a commentary of the ear whisper transmission of the great maintaining. I have composed this in the place called Yangwei Rinchenling. And then he explains that he has faithfully respected and studied for 12 years with Tsongkhapa, and thoroughly studied the sutras and tantras. So the composer of this text is called Namkapal. And then His Holiness is reading few verses that are composed when this text was published. And in fact, these verses are composed by His Holiness himself when this text was first published, I think in Tibet. I have received this teaching from my very kind master, senior tutor Ling Rinpoche, who had received this from Minyak Rinpoche. The essence of interpretative and definitive teaching, and also dose of emptiness by Kidupje, they are received from Minyak Rinpoche. Then I will also read the last chapter of dedication. So the first verse is making the dedication, making a brief dedication, saying that may all sentient beings be able to lead the ways of life of Bodhisattva. And the second verse dedicates that may all sentient beings be happy, may all sentient beings encounter temporary peace and happiness. And the third verse dedicates that may they also encounter long-lasting permanent happiness. And the fourth verse makes the dedication that may all sentient beings be free from suffering. And the fifth verse, the first line of the fifth verse, dedicates that may all those sentient beings in the hell realm be without suffering. And then the next three lines of the fifth verse makes the dedication that may from the clouds of the collection of the true merit and wisdom of the bodhisattvas may all their sufferings be removed. And then verse 6 and 7 is making the dedication that the sufferings of the neighboring hills be removed. And the verse 8 and 9 makes the dedication that may the sufferings of beings in the hell be purified and removed. And next verse 11 is making the dedication that other sufferings of neighboring hells be removed. And verse 11 makes the dedication that may the suffering cease due to the power of Vajrapani. And verse 12 makes the dedication, may sentient beings be without suffering due to the compassion of Avalokiteshvara. And then verse 13 and 14 makes the dedication that may they also be without suffering through the miraculous manifestation and performance of Manjushri. And verse 15 makes the dedication that may they be without suffering due to the power of the eight close disciples of the Buddha. And verse 16 makes the dedication that may the sentient beings be may the animals sufferings of animals be eliminated. And verse 17 makes the dedication that may the sufferings of the hungry ghost cease. And verse 18 makes the dedication that may all possess complete sense faculties, and may the pregnant women are able to deliver without pain and suffering. And then verse 19 and 20 makes the dedication that may all be without mental unhappiness and suffering. And verse 21 and 22 makes the dedication that may all sentient beings be free from the sufferings of sickness and sufferings of encountering what they do not like. Verse 23, 24, 25 and 26 makes the dedication that may those who are traveling in different directions be without harm from human beings and non-human beings. And verse 27 makes the dedication that may all be without harm and possess splendor and magnificence. And then verse 30 makes the dedication that may they possess perfect physical form. And verse 31 makes the dedication that may all possess perfect virtue. Verse 32 makes the dedication that may they possess perfect practice and mind to practice the path to liberation. And then the next two lines of verse 32 makes the dedication that may all possess favorable conditions and factors. Verse 33 and 34, 35 makes the dedication that may all have long life and the environment be pure. And verse 36, 37 and 38 makes the dedication that may they all be filled people with altruistic mind. And verse 39, 40 and 41 makes the dedication that may everybody possess the material necessities they look forward, and may they be free from harm. And verse 42 makes the makes a general dedication for the benefit of the sanghas. And then verse 43 makes a dedication for the benefit of the bhikshus. And then verse first two lines of verse 42 is a dedication for the benefit of the bhikshunis. And then verse 45 and 46 makes the dedication for perfect morality. And verse 47 is dedication for the possibilities of enjoyment of peace and happiness as a result. And verse 48 is making dedication for the benefit of all sentient beings. Verse 49 is making dedication that all the wishes of the Bodhisattva are fulfilled. And verse first two lines of verse 50 is making the prayer that the wishes of the Sarvakas and Pratika Buddhas fulfilled. And verse 51 and 52 is making the dedication that they all making the dedication for oneself and aspiring to actualize the temporary results. Verse 53 is praying that may all we be looked after by Manjushri. Verse 54 is making the dedication that we all be able to lead the ways of life of Bodhisattva. And verse 55 and 56 making the dedication that may we all be able to perfect the purpose of other sentient beings. And then verse 57 is making the dedication that may the teaching of the Buddha, which is the source of peace and happiness, flourish. And then verse 58, I think this is the last verse, the verse 58 makes the dedication. Verse 58 is paying homage, recollecting the kindness of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So His Holiness reads few lines from the very beginning as an auspicious sign. So this completes granting the explanation of mind turning like the rays of the sun, through whose study you are able to get some idea about the systematic process of stages of the path, and then also the commentary of Bodhicharyavatara, which is very effective in specific practices. And so you should make your best of effort to be able to undertake sincere, useful practice, and that is my dedication for the rest of my life. And if you undertake such a special practice, then it's definite that you will move from peace to peace, happiness to happiness. And if you undertake such a genuine practice, there is no need to take refuge here and there. You should take refuge to yourself in that kind of practice. That is the responsibility of the Sanghas. That is the responsibilities of those people who profess themselves as follower of the teaching of the Buddha, as the practitioner of Buddhism. And that should be the practice of all of you, monks or lay persons. If you don't have any trust and belief in the Buddha's teaching or in Buddhism, then that's of course absolutely up to you. But if you have some interest, then if you take some time, study and contemplate, then you will see some amazing sights. And it is this way we will all be benefited. Thank you very much. May we all be able to generate bodhicitta which we have not generated, and further strengthen and enhance the bodhicitta which we have cultivated. And may we also be able to fulfill the wishes of the prayers as is aspired by Manjushri, Samantabhadra and all other great masters. Just as the Buddhas of the three times have dedicated their virtues, similarly I will dedicate the virtues that I have earned. In short, Avalokiteshvara, who is the deity of the land of snow, just as he has prayed, may we be able to fulfill the wishes in accordance with the infallible causes and effects of karma and their result. And many of you might have got this small book which is called How to Take Misfortune into the Path, the weapon that destroys the self-grasping and helps to use misfortune onto the path. And he has composed this text for a sick person, and the text is marvelous. It's very sharp and hitting the target, and very beneficial. And particularly in your case, when you confront some problems and difficulties, read this book, and it will be really very effective and very useful. And then you will be able to develop some sense about the meaning. It is better not to have happiness but to suffering. When you have suffering, you will be able to remember Dharma. But also, again here, do not misinterpret what I am saying. When I say do not like happiness but suffering, and with that you shouldn't think that I should not aspire for Nirvana and omniscience. And this is other text which is called Dusin Yingbo, the essence of nectar, which explains the four important points: impermanence, suffering, selflessness, emptiness. This is another really extremely wonderful text, and therefore there was someone who wanted to publish a text and distributed it, and then I suggested them to publish these books. So whenever you are in a good mood, try to read these books, otherwise forget.